Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey friends, welcome back to Marriage Therapy Radio. I'm Zach Brittle. I'm here with Laura Heck. And we're also here today with filmmaker Roger Nygaard, who is kind of a big deal. He made a movie called The Truth about marriage. Laura and I looked at it last week. It was fascinating. We have a fascinating conversation. Not a lot of banter this week. We're going to get right to it. But it is, as always, a very cool conversation. Stick around. It's weird. It's wild, Roger, because... you know, we both watched the movie this week, and I feel like I've been talking to you for, like, you came on and your voice came on, and I was like, oh, I've been listening to this guy talk for, like, 2 hours
already. Yeah, I'm that same guy, so you pretty much know me.
Yeah. I've had clients who have said, whoa, you talk really slow in real life, and I said, are you listening to my podcast on 1.5 speed? So they're used to my chipmunk voice, but not my normal voice. So I think, I don't know how long ago was this, maybe like 2 or 3 years ago when you were doing the interviews or when you were in Seattle?
At this point, yeah, I would say it was probably about that two and a half years ago.
Yeah, I it's not every day that John and Julie are both in the office at the same time and that they're dressed and ready for camera appearance. And I remember kind of having like a big to-do. I'm like, what's going on in the office today? Like, oh, they're filming John and Julie, just, you know, another thing, just filming a documentary, no big deal. And so I think I actually walked in on you the day that you were there.
That's quite possible. Yes, there was a lot of activity buzzing around behind me as normal in their office. I mean, I was just so glad to be there. It was so hard to get that interview. That was my last interview and the one I've been angling for so long. And I finally got them to say yes.
So we're talking about your movie. It's called The Truth About Marriage. I'm going to read your bio, and then I have one very important question, which is, so here's the bio. This is Roger Nygaard. The book is The Truth About Marriage. It examines how we can all make relationships happier. He has directed a TV series such as The Office, The Bernie Mac Show, and has edited Emmy-nominated episodes of Who Is America, Veep, and Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's made several award-winning films, including The Car Salesman, Comedy Suckers, and he has probed UFO fanatics in 6 Days in Roswell, Star Trek fans and Trekkies, and existentialism in The Nature of Existence. So here is my very important question. Are you ready?
Yeah.
My daughter would like to know if you can get her a date with Jim Halpert.
I can give her advice that could pretty much get her a date with anybody.
Wow. That's awesome. How old is she? 17?
13. No, it's Mary.
Oh, the other one. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I also have a very important question. Has nothing to do with why you're here today, but did I read that you were involved with Grey's Anatomy in some way?
Oh yeah. I worked on that, edited season 14.
I think I'm in season 14.
This
right
is
now.
Too many points of connection between you and I. It's crazy. Fate has dictated that we finally speak today, apparently.
I first heard of your movie from a mutual friend of ours. So I bought it right away.
Wait, is it out already? It's out?
It hit, video on demand in February and then streaming just last week.
Hold on. Okay, so tell our listeners where they can find it, first of all.
Sure.
So.
The film, The Truth About Marriage, is available for streaming right now on Amazon Prime or video on demand and all the usual suspects. And the book, of course, is on Amazon.
Awesome. What do you recommend? I mean, some of us are still in lockdown, so maybe video is kind of fun right now.
Yeah, well, the book is, I finished the film and I had so much great data from people like the Gottmans and all. Yeah. I talked to 15 psychologists as well as anthropologists and everyday knuckleheads and gathered all this amazing data. And it's just so much can fit in the documentary. And so I thought I've got to do something with it. And so I wrote the book to go along with it. And your daughter, Zach, should read the book if she wants to know how to get a date, because there's a specific chapter in there on how to be attractive. Mm-hmm. I laid it out. I didn't get to that. That was one of the chapters that didn't make the final cut of the documentary.
Oh,
what are we all attracted to? Because it's really scientific, the things that we're attracted to or repulsed by. And mm-hmm. men and women are attracted to different things. You guys obviously know these things, I'm sure. And they've learned they're very specific. For example, I'll give you one example. When they can look at the data on dating sites, people say when they make a list of here are all the things I'm attracted to in a partner, this is what I'm looking for. They can look at what they say they want. Then they can look at what they click and what they actually want. And those two things diverge. And it goes back to evolution. We are looking for survival, outward signs of survival or aspects that will increase our chances or our offspring's chances of survival. And people, no matter what they say, they're going for looks and money. That's what they click. And it's reversed. Women go for money first, looks second, men looks first and money second. And that sounds pretty crass, but that's what the data says.
Mm. And that's, we're linking that strictly to like an evolutionary standard, not like a
resources.
Like an egotistic. Yeah.
Yeah. You need resources to survive and for your offspring to survive. And looks is about, we're looking for, now they now know that attractiveness is based on congruency. Mm-hmm. You want to have
symmetry.
Right. And that's what we look for in a person, and someone who is in the middle statistically, like size and placement, eyes are not too wide, not too narrow, nose not too big, not too small. We're looking for all these things that are about the statistical average, because that shows that our genetics are probably more in the statistical average, which is better for reproduction.
Interesting.
You know what blew my, I mean, there were several moments, Zach and I were chit-chatting before you hopped on, and I was really intrigued by several things. Number one, I was wondering, well, first I got to ask you this question. How did you come up with the people that you were going to interview? Because there are some people that I follow that are my sort of really well-known people in the industry of couples therapy or just attraction, all of that. And these were some people I've never heard of before and was like, wow, how have I never heard of them before? So how did you come across them? I mean, Bill Doherty was hometown for you, and he had a lot of moments, a lot of sound bites in the video, which was great. So that was a gentleman that I was really well aware of. And then I also noticed you had kind of a mix of not only psychologists, but people who were studying history and like anthropology and sociology. And that was fascinating to me, this types of facts. But how did you land on your guests?
Yeah, I mean, I started out knowing very little. And I'm a single person talking about relationships and marriage, which itself is kind of ironic, right? And how dare you? You've no experience in being married. Well, I have found in all my documentaries, I have been an outsider looking in, and it gives me an objectivity.
Totally.
And Bill Doherty said this, he was at a film festival screening when someone had brought this question up. And he said that when I interviewed him, because I wasn't married, I asked these seemingly naive questions that a married person wouldn't ask, because married people come to him with a pre-thought theory of marriage already in their mind, and they're looking for him to confirm it. Whereas I'm just, what is this all about? It makes no sense. I'm a failure.
Right.
Help me.
Yeah.
And I then created or formed a theory that I built based on all of this data. How did I start? I went online, looked at Amazon and started collecting books, a stack probably 5 feet tall. Because if you go to the bookstore and look at that section on self-help and relationships, it's huge. And I just started reading. And like you said, psychology, anthropology, biology, evolution, these are all affecting who we are and the decisions we make. We think we have free will, but surprise, it's all pre-programmed through millions of years of evolution on what you're going to choose or be attracted to or say in a given situation of circumstances or whatever environment you're in. What you will do and choose is very predictable. This is what I learned. So anyway, back to your question. I took that stack of books, made a list of all of the authors. They all tended to be researchers or psychologists or scientists. I got a big map, put it on the wall, and put push pins for where they're all located, and started to see where they're clustered, and then sent out emails. And whoever responded, I would then plan my trip. Okay, here's the East Coast trip. There's this guy, Dr. Robin Baker, I really wanted to talk to, who wrote the book Sperm Wars.
Yes.
And he was in southern Spain. So I thought, okay, I'm going to have to go to Europe. Sorry.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah, actually, when you got to the point and you're like, well, I had to fly all the way. I'm like, I'm sure that was
southern Spain.
Wah, wah. Okay. I mean, I'm kind of geeking out, but I want to give Zach some time because I tend to talk over him when I dork out and fangirl.
What's funny is about 15 minutes ago, Laura was like, I don't know this guy. I don't know how you heard of him. So I'm going to let you run the show. And I'm like,
Yeah, we'll see.
I'll just sit here. Yeah, no, I had the same experience. I mean, I tell clients all the time that I got hooked on a guy named Eli Finkel. Did you come across him in your research?
No, I didn't.
He's out of Chicago, I think. And he kind of wrote the book, kind of maybe the scientific version of your book. It's sort of like this collection of universal wisdom around what marriage is and what it is historically and what it is culturally. I really appreciated that that's what you served up. I was thinking about who would I show this movie to, like in my client practice, which clients need to see it. And it's frankly, it's the clients that you're describing that go in to see Bill Doherty who have this kind of preconceived idea and need that idea to be kind of challenged or busted up. I found it especially intriguing that the couples that you chose to interview, very few of them were sort of your heteronormative sort of husband married to a wife scenario. And because that's the one we know, right? That's the one that we just sort of put in the can or that we see on TV most often. But you had like this one polyamorous couple and then the African-American
mail order bride.
Family. Yeah, okay, the mail order bride.
Okay, hold on. Can we just for a second talk about the mail order bride situation? Because I didn't want to say it. I might have missed that part, but it was, she's French and they marry. And then all of a sudden she wants to have a career and that just wasn't going to work for me. So I guess she's on the outs. Was she really a mail order bride? Really?
Well, the backstory is they met at a party at my house. He's a friend of mine. And so that's how people tend to get in my movies because they're friends or I know them or their connections, or I get invited to their wedding. And so I bring a camera. I had a big party and they met in the swimming pool at my house and hit it off. She had just arrived from Eastern Europe, from Prague, actually. And wanted to meet Americans, right? They dated on and off for several years, long distance. She would fly back and he would pay for this and fly her over. She would spend several months and go back. She finished her studies in economics. And then eventually they decided, the way they put it was, they were happier together than apart. So they decided to get married. Mm-hmm. It lasted 5 years. And then part of my process in the film was I would go to weddings, film the wedding, interview the couple, and then check in 3 or 5 or 7 years later.
Brilliant.
And see what happened to this couple.
Yeah.
And when I checked in on this two, they were getting divorced and were willing to talk about it. It was actually hard to get them to talk, but I finally talked them into it. And and you get to see how they were approaching their divorce, which made them better friends than they said than the last year of their marriage.
You know, I just thought it was fascinating that I kept kind of looking for me. And I never showed up in the movie, right? Like, not as a therapist, but as just the husband married to a wife. And I guess there's that one family in the kitchen.
There were some what you would call normal couples that I went to their wedding, checked in on them, and they didn't make the final cut because normal is just boring. It's not entertaining. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, there's less to be learned. You learn most when things go wrong. Mm-hmm. So this is typical of all my documentaries. The people that make the final cut are the exceptional people, the exceptional Star Trek fans, the exceptional UFO fanatics, not the normal UFO fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same here. We learn more, I think, from the couples who are more on the periphery than we do from the ones who are kind of in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's where the film is going to add value to sort of my list of resources is like, if you're kind of feeling sort of stuck or in kind of the narrow, how do you broaden the scope of what you're seeing? You know, one of my reflections is, in reality, as a studied therapist, you know, and I think Laura would say this too, a lot of what your expert base offered up, apart from kind of the history and sociology pieces, is sort of like, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, you have the one guy kind of going, he boiled it down as like, it's your buddy. He was on the pier and he was like, be nice. And I forget the second piece of advice, but I was like, that's really what it boils down to. Like, be kind and make your daily choices basically is the.
Be kind and ask for what you want. That was his advice. Be kind. If you boil it all down, the 10 commandments, be kind and ask for what you want.
Yeah.
I'm listening to a book right now that I'm in love with, a comedian. I'm not in love with him, but I'm really drawn to a comedian, Pete Holmes. I don't know if you know Pete Holmes, but he...
I worked with him. Yeah, I edited his TV show, Crashing.
Yeah, I love Crashing. I'm sort of watching Crashing while reading his book, which is called Comedy Sex God, I think. But he talks about his transition out of his own faith. And he says the Ten Commandments, if it was written by an atheist, it would have been one guy who just went up on the mountain and came down with a single thing that said, don't be a dick. Like that's what is required to be a person,
the golden rule.
Yeah. Don't be a dick. Be kind. Ask for what you need.
So. Yeah.
I covered that in my last documentary, The Nature of Existence, which is about existentialism. I always take on these impossible to answer topics. And one thing I learned there is that this golden rule that is Jesus is famous for actually predates Jesus. Confucius preached something called the silver rule, which is similar, but it's instead of do unto others as you would have them do unto you, his version is do not do to others what you would not want done to you, which is essentially live and let live.
Yeah.
Do unto others is kind of invasive. Like, how do you know that they want the same thing you want? And so this, if you take it back even further, what I learned from the evolutionists and the biologists is that there's something that any animal that lives in a group, like deer live in a group, a society, a pack or a team or a group, whatever you want to call it. And they practice something called reciprocal altruism, trading favors. They remember who owes who a favor and who's not pulling their weight. And if you're not pulling your weight, you get ostracized. We do the same thing, and it's called morality. We give it a word, morality. And it's a requirement to live in groups. And religion came along and put names on and took credit for these things that are necessary for us to live and interact together.
Interesting. You get ostracized. You get kicked off the island if you don't follow and abide by the rules.
And in relationships.
Absolutely. In relationship.
Hey gang, you may have heard me talking in recent weeks about a project that I've been working on. Well, I'm proud to say that it's ready to go and I'm excited to let you know about it. It is called the Marriage Therapy Journal Book Club. I finished the book and found out that people wanted some support and around it. And so I decided to open up kind of a group setting for folks who wanted to spend some time really taking a deeper dive. You can learn more about the book club at the products page at marriagetherapyradio.com. I also put it up on our Facebook page, the Marriage Therapy Radio Facebook page. Check it out. I'm going to leave it up until the end of the month, and then we'll get started in July. So look forward to having you in the group. Back to the interview.
I'm curious, who was the... there is one moment where there was, I'm listening to this at the gym. So I have it set up. It's on video. I'm working out. And then all of a sudden I have this moment where I like put my weights down. I walk over to my phone. I pull it up. I'm like, who's talking right now? And it's this woman and she's talking. It started into talking about and debating who has the power, men or women in heterosexual relationships. And it's this older woman. Maybe you can tell me who she was.
Dr. Pat Allen.
Yeah.
You know exactly what I'm okay. And she's talking, she's saying, women have the power. And I was just like, this is fascinating. You keep preaching because you're going to get a lot of audience that's going to want to listen to what you have to say, but it's going to raise a lot of eyebrows. So tell me about that. What are your thoughts on what she had to say about women having the power? Women, men are here for women. Women are the ones who reproduce. I mean, I just was like, wow, this is totally a different way of hearing about
that. Yeah, right. Well, this is fascinating to me. It comes from happy wife, happy life. I began to investigate, well, what does that mean? And is it real? We have this belief or idea that in a patriarchy that it's a man's world.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? That's a facade. Mm-hmm. The reality is, and I asked couples, I said, and people in general, who is the boss in most relationships, the man or the woman? And it was unanimous, almost 99%, I would say, the woman is the boss. How can that be? And the deeper I probed into this, what I discovered is that in a relationship, you need harmony. And there are going to be conflicts, and you have to get through the conflicts. And in order to get through the conflicts, both people have to feel happy or satisfied. If one of them is not happy, they both can't be happy.
Right.
And in order to get to happiness, what does it take? And people were hard pressed to go to the explanation. They all said, yep, happy wife, happy life. Got to keep my wife happy for me to be happy. And it takes a while for men to learn this. They don't start out that way. Generally, they start out a little bit delusional. They run into trouble and then they realize they're not going to win. And then they start, whatever my wife says, ask my wife. It's up to her. She has the final veto. And the psychology behind it, in my opinion, my theory is that when you are trying to get through conflict, you both want to get there. Now, how do you get there? Well, if there's an argument, you argue. And the masculine person, and it could be the woman who's more masculine in some cases, maybe 20% of the woman has more masculine traits than the man. But the masculine person uses logic and litigates and wants to debate. Well, you said, well, let's roll the tape back. I said, and see who's wrong. Whereas the feminine doesn't care about any of that. She or the feminine person needs to be heard. She's hurting. She wants to be recognized. She wants an apology. And then she's fine and she can go on. It doesn't matter who's actually at fault. It's completely irrelevant. Now, when two people are going at it from one's logical and one's emotional, the emotion always trumps logic in that situation. Logic cannot defeat an emotional hurt. So eventually the logical one realizes, I'm wasting my energy. I want to get back to watching the game. So the way I'm going to get there is to, okay, you know what, honey, I'm so sorry. And then what the Gottmans teach is how those interactions should go. And it should be, please tell me what I can do to help you feel better. That's about all you should say in an argument. And then, and then you substitute the word I for you. Instead of saying, you are such a slob, you say, I feel so anxious when the garage is a big mess.
Right.
And you can help me feel better if we can work together to solve this. It's a much more constructive way to approach a conflict. And all of that is, those are parts, coefficients. There's more going on, but that's part of the reason why people ultimately land on, well, the woman's the boss.
What's that? It's that line from My Big Fat Greek Wedding, where she goes, the husband may be the head, but I am the neck.
That's right. Wherever I turn, he goes. Yeah. Is that what the idea is? Somebody recently said that was bullshit. They basically said, this is gross. This is disgusting. I don't like that terminology. Who was it? Was it somebody that I was reading recently?
Yeah, probably.
This is the hard part. And I don't know if you had this experience of, here you have all of these experts, everybody's saying something. How do you filter through? Because for me, having so many voices speaking truth about their awareness and how they view a relationship, what'll make it work, what makes it deteriorate, it's uncomfortable for me to have so many different choices, so many different voices, which is why as a truest Gottman, I mean, Zach and I are both certified Gottman therapists. We've both trained with the Gottmans. And so that's the framework. That's the lens that I view relationships through. And it becomes really hard for me then to hear all of these other opinions that might say, no, it's this, no, it's this. And so it's easy for me to say, you know what, I got to be a truest. And that's what makes me comfortable. It might be a narrow lens, but it is a lens that makes it easier for me to be able to teach and for couples to hear. But how did you come out of this with so many different voices speaking to relationships?
Yeah, well, who's got the data? The Gottmans have the data. Mm-hmm. They did the research.
True.
And you can replay their experiments and test their data.
Sure.
So if someone has an opinion and they have no data to back it up, well, why should you believe them?
Yeah.
I mean, you might have a feeling that something is this way or the other, but feelings can be wrong. We know I felt things that were wrong many times. And so the scientists are the ones who are testing hypotheses about human behavior. And they're changing their opinions all the time. The more data that comes in, a scientist says, well, you can never know truth, but you can only get closer to truth. The more data you get this much closer. And I mean, we're 99.99% close to believing that the world is round because there's a lot of data, for instance. So we call that a fact. Until somebody comes up with more data to prove the other, the opposite, that's what we're going to go with. And it's the same in relationships. People behave certain ways. And there are reasons, and you can look back at the reasons why we ended up in this position where we are. And what they tend to point to, especially the historians, is that human behavior changed radically about 6,000 to 10,000 years ago with the discovery of agriculture. There's really before agriculture and after agriculture. Mm-hmm. This thing we call marriage is a new invention, a new idea that came about after. Before agriculture, humans lived in small tribes that were nomads that wandered from here to there, and everybody shared everything. Reciprocal altruism was crucial. Nobody owned anything. There's no propriety. Men didn't own women, which is part of what came after agriculture. Mm-hmm. Men didn't own the land. Everyone shared food, resources, shelter, raising children. And a lot of the historical and anthropologists argue that they shared sex. Sex was not proprietary. If you they found one tribe, actually, you know, how do you test that thesis? Well, you find current tribes today that are living that way. And they found tribes, and there was one tribe, maybe this was one who was in the Amazon, where they had a word for someone who was what they called stingy with their genitals. Because they weren't sharing their sex with the tribe.
Yeah.
And that seems very outrageous to a culture now where monogamy is the rule.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But Mother Nature doesn't care about our thoughts and rules and feelings as long as we're reproducing successfully. Mm-hmm. And so before agriculture, that was best for humans as a species. Now, because there's so many people, so many more people, and we don't live in small tribes, a new rule had to evolve. And what happened after agriculture is that they stopped moving around. They lived in one place. Pretty soon, men started thinking, well, this is my land and my domesticated animals and my woman and my children. And I want to make sure that I'm passing along all my properties, all my possessions to my genetic offspring. So this idea of marriage began to occur or be invented as a way of controlling the sexual behavior of women. Because if a man is out working in the fields or he's out hunting or he's dealing with livestock, he can't practice what they call mate guarding in the wild, where he keeps an eye on his woman 24/7 to make sure it's only his children. You know, there's this old phrase, mommy's baby is daddy's maybe. How can you be certain? A woman knows it's her baby. It's 100%. Yeah. A man, right. There's no way he can be sure unless he's kept her caged 24/7. And marriage is this social fence that caged women so that men could be sure or reasonably more certain that it was their offspring. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little bit ironic that the origins of marriage have that as the motivation.
That's the first time I have heard of that. And it was an aha moment for me where I was thinking, oh my gosh, this makes perfect sense. They want to pass everything off to their offspring, but they need to be able to make sure it's their offspring. And even I think one of the statistics that I remember hearing is even today, is it 10% of children are not from their biological, from their assumed father? Is that the statistic that I remember hearing?
Yeah, correct.
Which was kind of like, okay, well, 10%, that doesn't seem high to me, but it, I'm sure, was just a big deal back in the day where you just couldn't tell, had no idea of making certain.
Well, to get to the 10% figure, that means there's a lot of cheating that's well above 10%. So because our culture changed so radically and forced us to adopt monogamy as the new rule, it didn't change who human beings are as a species. And so that's why you see headlines all the time of this Republican just cheated on his wife, you know, who was proclaiming how wrong it is 10 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. And it's polyamory making a resurgence, or alternative lifestyles. People are looking for ways to deal with the fact that they feel unsatisfied, dissatisfied, frustrated in their relationships today. And we're frustrated because our culture asks us to behave in a way that's out of sync with who we are as a species. Mm. And these ideals that our friends, relatives, parents, society ask us to reach are unreachable, virtually unreachable. Mm. And eventually, you're going to fall short, and both you and your partner are going to be frustrated with each other and disappointed. And then what do? We need counseling. That's where you guys come in. That's where people need help understanding that the only solution to reach happiness is, number one, first, you have to accept yourself for who and what you are. And number two, accept your partner for who and what they are. Because the Gottmans, another one of their statistics is 69% of all relationship problems are never solved. They're just accepted, right. And then you move on. Acceptance is the key. It's pretty hard to accept that your husband leaves his socks on the floor, but you're going to have to if he is who he is. He might change his behavior with enough of a threat, but then he's going to be resentful and it's going to come out in other ways. And then we've got to deal with what's the best way to handle that conflict?
Yeah.
I love that it's just sort of matter of fact, right? There's this notion that this is kind of the way it is. And this is what the science tells us. And this is where the research comes from. And the world needs scientists. And the world also needs like storytellers, you know, people who can make sense of the science. And I'm wondering if you had in your documentary process, like a story that kind of blew your mind where you were just like, holy cow, that all clicked, you know, the aha for you personally, as you were making your, you know, putting this thing together.
Well, I got two things. The first was that Rachel Hope is a co-parenting expert, and she made this very simple eye-opening statement that people look at love as feelings. I feel love. Prove that you're feeling. I'm going to prove my feeling. It's impossible or very difficult to prove feelings. They're transitory. They're internal. What you can prove is behavior. And so a better vow than I promise to feel love toward you forever, because how do you know how you're going to feel in 10 years? No one knows. Is a vow that says, I will behave lovingly toward you forever. Even if we're mad at each other, even through a divorce, even through hard times, even if I don't feel the way I'd like to feel, I will still continue to behave lovingly toward you. What a better way to approach love, because behavior is measurable. You can actually tell if you're living up to your goals or not. How do you measure feelings? You can't do it. And another thing that blew my mind was this idea, and this is why I had to search out Robin Baker, that there's this thing called sperm warfare going on.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Baker and his researchers discovered in the 90s that when they examine sperm, there's different kinds of sperm. There's not just one sperm that fertilizes an egg. Only 1% of sperm fertilizes an egg. So what's that other 99% doing? And they looked at it, and there were all these sperms with double heads, big mid pieces, coiled tails, short tails, long tails, different sizes and shapes. And so then what they theorized and set out to prove is that what's going on is that they're like two competing armies that are designed. One man's sperm is designed to fight another man's sperm. So may the best sperm win to fertilize the egg, which is better for genetics, so that the strongest, best sperm gets through. And what this implied is that women promote sperm warfare inside their bodies. Another word for that is promiscuity. They're having sex with more than one man within a five-day period, because sperm can live up to 4 to 5 days inside a woman's body. And that was fascinating to me. And I had to go find this guy and ask him about this.
Yeah, particularly given the context you described, where we've sort of moved into monogamy. But that wasn't always the case when we were like trying to figure out how to make the strongest tribe, for example. When you started talking, I started grinning to myself, because I got to tell you this story. I was at a amusement park a couple years ago, and
I don't know where this is going to go. I got sperm warfare and you got a story, but let's hear it.
I'm at an amusement park a couple years ago, and I climb into the, you know, that ride, like the Lazy River, which is the big round one that bumps against the thing and then all the water comes down. So me and my kids are in on kind of the one side, and then there's this woman on the other side, and she's got her two kids next to her, and they definitely are like her kids, redhead, kind of like same features and everything else. And we're all just chatting. And then I look down at her leg, and she has a tattoo on her leg, and the tattoo, no lie, is of a, what is very clearly two large sperm with the features of her children tattooed onto their like face. Like she's got her like sperm children tattooed on her leg, and almost like a cartoonist fashion. And so as soon as you started talking about that and how there's different, you know, types, and they have different kinds of,
it's, you're almost imagining like the redheaded sperm,
the redheaded sperm is going to come
With like the glasses.
Oh my gosh. My whole family was just like, do we all see that? Do we all? And
And did you ask her about it? That could have been a great question.
No. We just silently judged her. And then my younger daughter, the one who wants to date Jim Halpert, she's like, what is it? What is everybody laughing at? What is it? What's going on here? So all of a sudden I had to teach my kid about.
On the lazy river.
On the lazy river. Yeah.
That's right. The redheaded sperm went out.
It's probably good you had that conversation because kids are so far ahead of parents now. They know everything long before you think they do.
Yeah.
You should ask my son. One of these days we'll have my son come on. He's 5. And I'll have him explain to our listeners his understanding of how babies are born. But I have it on video where I ask him and he says, well, you know, the sperm comes up to the egg and goes, let me in. And she's like, no, not you. You will do. And so then he's like, and then the sperm wiggles in and she says, welcome. And then he loses his tail and then it's a zygote. And it's just really funny to hear a 5-year-old explain how babies are born.
That's very accurate, though. That was a supremely accurate description of what goes on.
I try to teach him, and then of course you have to make the sounds, make it interesting while you're teaching him. So he's got that story in his head.
I love that idea too, that what's going on at a micro level with the sperm and the egg is mirrored on the macro level in dating and relationships. And the same thing is happening where a woman puts up barriers in order to find the most genuine suitor.
Yeah.
That's why she says no. And he keeps pushing and she keeps saying no. And he keeps pushing until she goes, okay, you know what? I think this guy's genuine. I'm going to let him in. And then babies are made.
Right. I thought it was fascinating in the documentary, and we'll have to wrap this up because I could probably just keep going and going and going, talking about the difference between Match.com and what's the other dating app? Where
he was talking about the difference between eHarmony and Tinder.
Oh, eHarmony or Match. I mean, those are both like similar, right? Where you're listing the qualities versus Tinder, which is what do you look like and what's your proximity to me? And I was watching that and going, oh, that's interesting. I also love that you had interviewed, and I'm curious how this interview went for you, talking to Ashley Madison. That was a very short clip, by the way. Didn't get a whole lot of Ashley Madison interview in the documentary.
Yeah, point of view is easy to state pretty quickly, and he's kind of one note. It is what it, you know, Ashley Madison is to help people have affairs because we're all needing to cheat, according to that theory.
Yeah.
And here's a way to do it. I got to him, interviewed the CEO of Ashley Madison about a month before he got, he resigned because they had a hacking.
That data breach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happened. But it's still there. I mean, it's a testament to how popular this sort of idea is.
Yeah.
But he is simply providing a service for something that people want.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I'm curious about this. It's basically the question that kind of popped around a little bit is like, what's the shelf life of a relationship? And
3 years,
I think, that's what I heard. 3 years. And I remember writing this in my phone, pausing, taking a moment. Cause sometimes I hear things, I'm wishing I had my notepad. And somebody said, it's not about having one relationship. It's about having many. It's a series of relationships over and over and over with the same person.
Yes.
And that just gave me the moment of aha where I thought, I'm going to share this with my couples who need to feel hope that the relationship that they had 20 years ago is done and it's the shelf life. It's over. Yeah. It expired. And now it's time to think about what is this relationship going to look like today? And then 3 years from now and 6 years from now.
That's how you get past 3 years, is understanding that passion switches to compassion.
Mm.
Things change.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right. You're going to use that one. Write it on your whiteboard. I see it. It's empty right
it's
now.
It's ready for the next chapter. Yeah.
You need compassion for raising children and you need passion to have children. So that's why we start out feeling really excited about someone and having sex 3, 2, 4, 5, 6 times a day, whatever it is. Then that drops off naturally over time because you can't spend that much time and energy on that pursuit. When you've got children, you need to put your energy into raising children. Even if you don't have children, at the end of 3 years, the sexual excitement is not the same as it was at the beginning. It's designed that way. Now, that's not to say you can't recapture that to some degree. And so in the book, I have an entire chapter on how to rekindle passion. Yeah. Didn't fit in the documentary. But there are passion experts that teach couples, and they can do it within 2 or 3 hours, how to get back to that excitement they had at the beginning. And that's why people are switching partners, because they're trying to recapture that excitement, that initial excitement that naturally mm-hmm. fades over time. But if you don't want to keep changing partners, if you want to stay with the same partner, you can fix your passion, because naturally over time, people become more and more like each other and they become habituated to each other, and it's no mm-hmm. longer special. You're sleeping in the same bed every night and waking up next to each other every night. What's special about that? You do it every day, right? But there are other wonderful things that come from the connection that you, that deep connection you can have with someone. But losing the passion is something people won't give up. And what the passion experts teach is how to rekindle the polarity, the masculine and feminine polarity. Mm. When you go to work, the office is a masculine environment. So everyone's behaving in a masculine way. And when the feminine partner comes home, he or she has to learn how to turn that off and switch back to feminine in order to rekindle the spark to have sex, to enjoy that spark that they used to have.
Mm. Wow. Do you happen to have one of the experts that you talk to that talks about the masculine and feminine polarity? Is there someone off the top of your head that you're like, that was one of the, because I didn't read the book and so I missed this. Now I'm going, okay, well, now I want to hear this chapter. I want to go back and read this.
Well, David Deida is very famous in exploring masculine and feminine.
Okay.
And the passion experts that I interviewed and the whole chapter, what I describe everything that goes on in a passion encounter with couples. I observe one of their seminars from uh-huh. start to finish. And by the end, 3 hours later, these couples couldn't wait to run to their cars and fuck each other.
Hmm. Wow. That's great.
It was bizarre, especially yeah. for me there alone without having a partner to be surrounded by all this amorous energy.
You're like,
nobody pay attention to me. I don't need to be fucked. I'm fine.
Their names are Satyen and Suzanne Raja, R-A-J-A. Wow. Warrior Sage is their company. And they have seminars cool. that are amazing. They're really interesting to watch.
All right.
Or participate in.
It's The Truth About Marriage, right? Both the documentary and the book.
Yes. And you can find all the information at the website of the same name, thetruthaboutmarriage.com.
Right on. So come for the science and the wisdom. Stay for Blanquito.
Don Blanquito. Yes. The Brazilian super womanizer who had the biggest surprise ending of anybody in the film.
I know. It's really, right? It's pretty amazing. I really enjoyed that piece. I enjoyed that piece in part because my kids walked in on me watching it during his part one.
And you were like,
and I was like, get out of here, leave. You got to go. Like, they're, what are you looking at? And I was like, and then later on, I got to tell him, I was like, look at this. And then, of course, I won't spoil it for you. But yeah, you guys who are listening, go out and check out the documentary and the book as soon as you can.
The moral of the story is there's somebody out there for everybody.
That's right. Don't yuck somebody else's yum, because he found his yum.
Right on. Roger, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for sharing your movie with us. And it's as always, it's fun to talk to people who are doing the work in the trenches. So
thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. You guys, I was so honored to have Roger Nygaard join us and share with us his documentary, The Truth About Marriage. You can find it on Amazon Prime. In fact, I sat down and I watched it with my partner yesterday, which was just so much fun to have him sort of chat about the things that I talk about all day long. So grab your popcorn, grab your movie, grab your lover, and check out The Truth About Marriage on Amazon Prime. Thank you, as always, for all of you who are working to make your relationship better today than it was yesterday.